As your network perimeter expands into public cloud and mobile, how do you secure it? The answer has been some combination of endless firewalls and host agents and VPN, maybe from a variety of vendors. And hey, how's that working out for you? Getting it a little hard to keep up with it all? Well, our sponsor today is Open Systems. Open Systems offers an integrated solution that combines a secure cloud access security broker with cloud-integrated SD-WAN and a DevOps mentality that gives you a new way to design your increasingly complex perimeter security. Moritz Mann, head of product management, joins us from Open Systems for our security-oriented chat. And Moritz, you've been on the show before. Welcome back. But I got to lead with this question, man. I think of Open Systems as an SD-WAN company, which to me is like, you know, WAN stuff and, you know, circuit load balancing and these kind of things. But you guys have integrated security too?
Yes, we have. Thanks, Ethan. and thanks for having me again. Yeah, so actually Open Systems is combining DevOps, which creates a unique customer experience. But at the same time, we have a service platform that runs SD-WAN and integrated security service at the same time and creating more outcomes for customers in a nutshell.
Okay, so you mentioned offering different outcomes to customers and so on. And this isn't really a new topic for the SD-WAN space, and that security does come up a lot, so much so that I think it's a fair question to ask. Do you think that SD-WAN implies security these days, that if I'm investing as a customer in an SD-WAN platform, I should be expecting to get security?
Yeah, I mean, it's an imperative to have security built into your network, because without it, you have to aftermarket put it on, right? So there are two approaches. One is you have a provider, or you build your own network based on integrated point solutions. So there are some security platforms out there and products that claim that they are very good in security, and then they add SD-WAN functionality. And on the other hand, there are very good SD-WAN products adding security functions through chaining that again with other components. But I think from a enterprise perspective, we think you need to take a step back and look at the big picture. And the big picture is actually that if you have this separate point solutions integrated within each other, it doesn't give you the full picture, because it's one thing to integrate and trying to integrate all these point solutions, but on the other hand, it's about operationalizing them and running them in a day-to-day modus operandi. So it is more than just looking at on a feature level. It's more about how do you integrate that platform and these technologies into your enterprise IT stack and strategy, and operationalize it so that it creates value every day. And value in that sense means that your applications have more uptime, your users and your data is secure, and you are actually able to connect the different environments that IT consists of nowadays. So cloud applications, SaaS applications, on-prem applications, mobile users, IoT environments, sensor networks, all this needs to come together at some point in time.
So what makes SD-WAN sort of, in your mind, the place where you want to integrate as much security as you can, and how do you do that?
SD-WAN itself, it's a great technology, and the network actually becomes the glue to actually bring users and applications and data closer together. That's the network. So we come from a very infrastructure-centric world, which was built around IT data centers, physical data centers that were operated. Now we are in a world that is accepting that data centers are now abstracted in cloud and OPEX models. And we think that network in itself should be treated as a cloud function and become an OPEX conversation. But at the same time, you have this appliance world that now should be abstract. And at the same time, in the security world, there are many point solutions, like a point. On average, every enterprise have 40 to 100 different security products in operations to secure their data and their users. And we think that these two worlds should be combined into one service platform and with a deep integration to provide you with a budgetable and secure service platform.
You've used the word integrated pretty heavily, Moritz. You were mentioning earlier point solutions. So I think the point you're making, you know, if I have a bunch of other existing security products out there, one approach I might take is try to integrate my SD-WAN with those point solutions. In other words, this individual firewall that's sitting out here and this IPS that's sitting over there, and maybe I'll try to service chain through them or, you know, do these kind of things, as opposed to more of a one box does it all solution where all the traffic passing through this device does not only SD-WAN stuff, but that also has a bunch of security features that have been added to that traffic flow to make sure it's, you know, it's good traffic and it's allowed traffic and it's deep packet inspection that is the kind of thing I'm okay to have on my network, you know, that kind of thing.
So basically in a nutshell it is. So we integrate an external firewall, a great DNS and IP filter, a centralized threat protection framework that aggregates several threat intelligence feeds into one consolidated feed that where all the connected enforcement points are working with. We have a secure web gateway that's built in, and we have network security analytics and security monitoring, so an IDS, IPS that helps to protect the data flows and look into the data flows. And some of the integration aspects are great and that enable you to actually see full decrypted traffic, which is from a security perspective the thing you want. So because most of the other systems, if you have a point solution from the one of the known IDS vendors, are requiring then a network tab and are only able through this tab to look at the full decrypted traffic. And we have this right built in, right? We also but support external interfaces. So we are aware, of course, that customers took some investments in their existing infrastructure. So they can hook our system or a platform and use the data out of this platform as telemetry for their SIEM or their existing IDS infrastructure to enrich it with more security. But in the end, it's really the question how long and on what areas you want to focus on as a company. And we believe that some part of the baseline security should be covered by this service platform. And exactly these 20% that your internal IT and internal security team should focus on, which are really specific to your business needs, this is then covered with your very specific solutions that you have to deploy to secure your specific business case and business risk, actually.
To be clear then, when I get an Open Systems Edge device that I'm putting out at a branch or a remote site, I can activate a firewall function, a web gateway function, a DNS filter, an IPS on that box.
Yeah, so these are same as there are network function virtualization. We took the same approach and said we need to have security function virtualization. So yes, you can activate this on each edge node, but these edge nodes also run in the cloud, so they are lightweight. And we also support a client that steers traffic to the nearby cloud instance or the nearby edge.
Okay, so if I want to take some of the load off an edge device, I can just, if I want to do next-gen firewall inspection on outbound traffic, I can send it to a cloud service of yours for that?
Yes, we can support those models where we have a centralized deployment in the cloud. We operate with all the hyperscalers out there, and we are not relying on our own like backbone architecture. We use the architecture of giants like Microsoft or Equinix or AWS or Azure to actually use and transport traffic and host these cloud deployments. Because I believe that the data where most of the applications are being hosted nowadays is actually in one of those hyperscalers.
So there's some architectural questions that just popped in my head hearing you do this description, and I want to clear up. So one is, when I'm at an enterprise, I do SD-WAN, I'm kind of imagining this box, this piece of gear that I put into my branch, and that on this box, I'm lighting up these security functions virtualization kind of services that you're talking about. I'm going to be able to check the box, turn those on, and they're there. Then I think I have that part right. Correct me if I'm wrong. But then you also mentioned there's a cloud aspect to these security functions. Could you clarify that for me?
Yeah. So one is, of course, where can we deploy the platform, and which is So it can be deployed on the edge and in the cloud. And this is very important because we are also taking the ownership off the edge. Because actually, when you look at the marketing, everyone says, "Lex, send me your traffic and we handle it from there." But the main pain point often comes from the fact that companies don't want to run the edge devices by some telco or some third-party provider. They want to have a cloud-to-edge guarantee that we will provide. So we have to provide the full path visibility from the edge to the cloud, providing also uptime and service and security SLAs around those pieces. And at the same time, you mentioned the cloud piece coming up. We integrated now also a CASB solution into our platform, which is then capable of then also doing cloud native inspection, but also policy enforcement. Which is a big deal when looking at shadow IT and other areas of risk for a company.
Okay, we're going to get to the CASB stuff in a minute. Before we jump off to that, so okay, as you described, we can have the on-premises deployment of the system. I can then have an edge or a cloud-based deployment of an open systems node, if you will, is what I'm imagining here. So say I've got an AWS VPC, I could stand up a open systems instance in that VPC, connect my remote offices, tunnel traffic between that edge office with the physical device and the VPC with the cloud instance of the open systems device, and therefore I'm guaranteeing policy and so on. Is that the scenario we're talking about?
Yeah, absolutely. And actually, you raise a good point. It's mostly what customers we are looking for, and this is also why customers are going with open systems, is we're not only providing them a technology layer and some support on this. We'll also provide them with best practices and standardizations. So we come in and we define with your team an architecture and standardized deployment setups and deployment classes to actually have a standardized approach to that. So you can kind of look at this from someone who is doing DIY can move to co-manage, and customers wanting to become fully managed, they go with us and to really offload their teams and their also technology risk to us, so that we define together a great architecture and a standardized approach for adopting the cloud and the edge at the same time.
So putting on my skeptic's hat, though, a lot of companies are going to hear you say that and go, yeah, but I've already got all this money invested in my point solutions, and I'm not sure I want to, you know, make this security paradigm shift over to this different architecture. I'm going to have to spend money to do that. And I've already invested in these point solutions of mine that I'm pretty comfortable with. How would you answer people that make that sort of objection?
Yeah, usually customers or prospects that are asking these kind of questions, they have to rectify what they've been doing before. But at the same time, these companies have a big pain point. So they often suffer from a very high cost by just running an old network. So this can be MPLS lines, dedicated fibers that are backholding traffic from China to some 3 break or 4 breakout points globally. So they have, while they are saying that, they have also big pain points. And by telling them, look, there is a way that you can move your security policy that you currently have with all the baseline that you need, you can move this to the edge and into the cloud. They become aware that they will increase user performance by multiple factors. So we often talk about factors of 10 and cost savings beyond 30% and more. And it gives them time again and more resources to reinvest into areas to actually increase bandwidths, increase their security spend on other things. And when you have an existing investment, it's often like it's often like time limited. So there's often a 1 year end of life situation around the corner. So it's most of the times it's neatly perfectly fitting into the service transition phases.
And you made a big point there that there's an ROI calculation that can be made. And as I understand it, the way you at Open Systems do your licensing, I'm getting this security functionality in the box, or am I actually having to check a bunch of boxes and then pay extra for the security integration?
That's a great question, because before answering that, I think that you cannot underestimate the emotional part that's attached to kind of doing this step and also creating, going this forward and adopting to a new model. So we were always aware of this because we were one of the pioneers in this space. So we were creating the SaaS model in 2001, actually, and saying to customers, look, you don't need to take care of a hardware and software lifecycle anymore. While there were still like boxes from Checkpoint, Fortinet, and even Palo Alto Networks wasn't even there yet. So we help them by providing a great transparency. So we have one single pane of glass that aggregates all these functions, create and provides them with a lot of visibility. We also have a lot of enterprise integration features like delegated service administration. So you end up in a better spot where you have been. But this is, as you said, a very kind of emotional change for some of those folks. But in the end, the company and enterprises, they benefit from it because it structures the policy definition and orchestration in one single place. And even if you should move to another solution at some point, you will have not like a dispersed policy that's scattered over different point solutions. You have one place where you have everything enforced and defined in a clean fashion.
I'm laughing about the way you put emotion attached to it, because there is an aspect of that. No. I mean, having
there are those guys. You know?
I've been one of those guys. I've been that guy sitting in the back going, I don't want to change this router, firewall, whatever it is, because the one I have, I know how it works. I trust it. I know what its foibles are. It's not perfect, but for the most part, it's been a good piece of gear for me, and I love it so very much. And you want to change it? I don't want to change it. I'll have to learn a bunch of new stuff, and who's got time for that? And I get it. I get the emotional thing that you're talking about.
Ethan is a firewall hugger.
It may have happened at one point, yes.
Well, actually, I mean, usually the maturity of companies doing it in a do-it-yourself fashion is quite high. And they are the biggest critics to with a right, because they have a big knowledge. And it's often a business decision to move to a different model. So they have to be convinced, but also check into this kind of solution. And this is only by providing credibility with the existing customers and all the transparency that we provide. We don't have anything to hide. But I think the companies that are most of the times that are suffering the most are companies with other providers that are not providing them with the speed that the business is running at. So if you have to wait for a change request for 3 to 7 days to be implemented, if you have to chase down your account managers in order to get an incident prioritized and so on, these are companies that are in a real almost in a business risk, because their business is being slowed down by an architecture and by an operations model that's not modern and current anymore.
So you're saying that by being able to centralize security policies and business policies, and I'm thinking business policy in terms of this set of applications should get priority over that set of applications, et cetera, you sort of operationally streamline the business requirements.
Exactly. So the combination of a great DevOps team that consists of level 3 engineers with a high educational degree combined with a fully automated service platform, you get a faster turnaround. And also with like intelligent self-service functions that help you to do the changes still that you want to do. I think that's a great combination, because you have support and you have the visibility and actionable controls in your hands.
So Moritz, if we move the conversation ahead to the cloud component again, now we were talking about where we can put different devices. We were talking about how we can put an open systems device in a virtual way up in public cloud and have that be a node for us on our network. What else, how else does cloud factor into things? I mean, I think we kind of know some of the core value proposition from an SD-WAN perspective. Hey, I can optimize my traffic flows from this endpoint to this part of the public cloud. That we know. But when it gets into security, Timmy, it gets a little fuzzy because how are you even seeing all the traffic we might need to secure and so on? You mentioned something called a cloud access security broker. To start, get us oriented how to think about this problem.
Okay, it's a big market. It's a big topic because everything is so how applications are being delivered nowadays is through cloud. So you don't install anything significantly anymore on your device. So most of the times you receive all the processing logic and the data from the cloud in the background. So you have to look at this in a structured way. Which is morally, there are three key areas. One is the infrastructure as a service thing, which is mostly lift and shifting existing workloads from on-prem data centers to virtual private clouds or hyperscalers like the big three, right? Then you have the SaaS adoption, which is like the new way how you do business, and you use line of business applications. Actually, think of Salesforce, think of Office 365 and the big ones, but there are thousands of other ones that do all their little function and kind of data intelligence and support the different needs of business. And the third piece is cloud native functions. So this is the CI/CD realm where you have service meshes where you build the kind of cloud native functionalities and customer experiences. So let's pause there. And these are the three areas we are looking at. So looking at the first piece there, it's all about supporting traffic flows between your users, your physical locations, your mobile users to on-prem data centers and cloud data centers, which is the hybrid cloud approach. But at the same time, companies will support multi-cloud, or will need to support multi-cloud, because this becomes reality. So you're not only in Azure, but you probably also use AWS for some of your projects, and maybe also a third cloud. So this is where, starting from a security point of view, it's all about providing a secure network and fabric between those end users, on-prem locations, and those different cloud environments and the physical on-prem data centers still. And providing this in a way where you can do zoning, this is why we have a zone-based firewall, where you have application visibility, but also application policies in terms of traffic prioritization and failover behavior. So that's all about the availability and the security of those applications. In that aspect, or in this regards, we look into data flows. We look into all the east-west traffic, being it in the cloud, but also leaving from on-prem or mobile users, which is one big topic. For the SaaS piece, so the second bucket to put in the applications in, this is about IT has, to some extent, often fail to understand that users and business will move and push for SaaS application and use the path of least resistance. So the path of least resistance is you have an internet access and you have a credit card and then you have an application. So this is the path of least resistance. And there the issue is mostly data that is being uploaded to the cloud and that poses a risk to business in terms of loss of intellectual property information, confidential information, but also compliance risk like GDPR, PCI, HIPAA, and so on, that can then become a business risk for companies. And this is where we, as you said before, we enter the market with the CASB solution that's integrated in our platform.
Okay, we need to drill into the CASB. We have a couple of follow-up questions for you. I got one, and I know Drew's got one too, because we're both sharing notes here as we were making our comments to each other on what you were just saying. One thing you said was about east-west traffic and inspecting east-west traffic. So from a standpoint of that traversing from cloud to on-prem and back, that makes sense because I can see you've got a point of inspection right in the middle there, you know, an appliance that can do all that inspection. But I think you also said east-west in the cloud itself. Did I understand that right? And if so, how does that work?
Yeah, because, I mean, the reality is that most of your partners and probably your other workloads are also in the cloud already. So we work together with Microsoft as a partner, but also other cloud service providers, because we see that there's inter-VPC traffic within the company. So we have all the edge nodes also becoming cloud edge nodes. So we see traffic via our NS network security monitoring, network security analytics, flowing through either Cloud Exchange POPs in within Equinix, but also in cloud natively deployed edge nodes, where we see then east-west traffic inside the clouds, where we can separate different VPCs and VNets and regions and become a gateway there. So this is classic. Which application is talking to which? Are there any malicious behaviors that we can detect? Any actors that are occurring? But you also mentioned the endpoints. So the endpoints also are in the end come to the cloud itself, and this then requires also, independent of the device, an inspection then via an API.
And on this VPC to VPC or V to VNet, so does this mean if there's a service or function running in, say, VPC A, and it's contacting a service or function in VPC B, you can detect that and monitor that and see, yes, this is allowed to happen or no, it's not?
Yes, exactly. So because for us, the different VPCs are different, again, different zones from a firewall's perspective, the applications and users moving in those between those zones are visible to us. So we can say, can this application be traversed and actually talk to the other zone? Can this resource be accessed? And inside the protocol itself, we can look into and break up wherever possible the data and decrypt the data when needed and when allowed, to look into actually payloads, to look for malicious patterns, IOCs that can occur there.
Okay, that makes sense. You had also mentioned mobile users, and that's the piece I wanted to specifically follow up on. How are you able to track what a mobile user is up to? Does that mean there's an agent that goes on the endpoint device, or are you steering a mobile user's traffic in some way?
Yeah, so for mobile users, the experience has to be the same as for on-prem users. So actually, we don't regard an on-prem user anymore as an on-prem user, because most of your workstations have become laptops or tablets or mobile phones. So we have an agent that steer them to the next closest edge or to the closest cloud mobile entry point, as we call it. Mm-hmm. And from there, we then decide, is it backhauling traffic to the real data location? Is it breaking out? Does it need to be broken out to the internet? Or is it directly in the VPC a resource that's being accessed? And this gives us a great visibility and also control for the customer to actually say what is allowed behavior and what is not allowed behavior. But with CAS, we go one step further, because you could still use your private PC or your son's gaming PC to access the cloud resource. And this is where API inspection comes in. So API inspection actually then takes care of interacting with the different cloud providers and to pull out the logs and the activity streams to then detect behavior and enforce policies to say, well, I want to see a corporate device when accessing this this cloud resource, and we don't want to see any other device. But you can also geofence at certain access areas and detect anomalous user behavior.
This is interesting. This architecture is a mix of the traditional architectures that a lot of companies are familiar with and have deployed. It adds in policy and a lot of policy management. It adds in The ability to enforce policy no matter where an endpoint is without them having to VPN back into headquarters, you know, forcing clients to have to do that. But it also means from an engineering perspective, you got to stand back a little bit and go, okay, open systems, explain to me how this works. And I've got to let go, a little bit and trust that it's going to be okay.
Well, on the other hand, when we're talking with people involved in those projects, they have a big responsibility burden on their back, because they are actually becoming the backbone of the company, and this is helping them to actually leverage the benefits of the digital transformation that's going on. So we are often not confronted with like pushbacks, but rather asked to, hey, did you see this? And how is the best practice in here? And we want to provide this guidance and also become this partner to help them and not to work against them and just be an outsourcer. So we run in 180 countries. We have thousands of deployments where we have one standard which we across different verticals we created, and we each of the companies joining us profit from the knowledge base and the so-called herd immunity from going this journey.
And you're hitting exactly what was going through my head. A lot of the companies that I've worked with, you end up having to do so much, especially over time when that company has accumulated technical debt by buying into all these point solutions, and now you're managing a bunch of different security solutions that do different things and maybe are kind of integrated, but maybe aren't. Now you're adding cloud to the mix and trying to solve that problem. It ends up being impractical because to be staffed at the level you'd need to be staffed at to actually handle all of that stuff, you'd need 2, 3, 4, 5 more people that you're not going to get. You're the one. You're, as you were describing, that person that's that infrastructure, that technology backbone of the company needs to have some of this functionality consolidated and put into a manageable platform because they're the only one that can do it. They can't sit there all day running the help desk ticket, just grinding away through tickets and trying to get all of this stuff exactly done, changing all of these infinite things that need changing on the infrastructure. You need a platform that can essentially do it all and make it very easy to do what you were doing before, but with policy instantiation rather than minutely filtering through a bunch of different lists and changing and pushing policies out to clients and all this stuff by hand artisanally during a change window and so on. So I'm sorry, I'm going on. You're bringing back like frustrations that I've had here over the years. And
there's a lot of pain around.
There is. We all need a hug. Can I have a hug?
Oh. Exactly.
Again, going back to open systems, you're point here, Moritz, and you know what I'm hearing is right. So we recognize this problem. You bake it all into one solution. That means when you invest in this platform, it's all taken care of in a way that matches what the business is doing with a perimeter that's everywhere now. People are working from home. People are mobile. People have workloads in the cloud, etc. Put all of that into one unified platform now, and still have it be secure and be able to demonstrate security and that you are secure to your customers and to auditors and all of the rest. That's what it sounds like we're getting here.
Yeah, I think you're right. I mean, it's absolutely to the point because it's not only a platform, it's a service and a platform. And this is the great combination because a platform alone, there are many platforms around and you're still left to co-manage or to get this through some indirect channel to get it managed, but we provide you with a standardized operational approach, best practices, and the service platform that does the work on the technical side. And coming back to your people rant, so to say, it's about because I mean the traditional support models and also how security and network infrastructure has been run in the past, I think it's not matching and coping anymore. Because if you look at what happened on the cloud space, the operational models also changed to DevOps and changed to continuous integration, continuous delivery. So we will not only upgrade the technology foundation and the concept to a SaaS model and shift from CapEx to OpEx, we'll also come with the matching operational modus operandi that helps customers then to connect again on the infrastructure level with and security level with a business that's often deploying now and wanting to invest in those cloud architects, cloud engineers, cloud app, full stack developers. And we provide this matching interface to them with a very scalable, very predictable model. And coming back to the pains again, I think having a point solution always comes with this life cycle and technology risk, but also from a knowledge perspective, there is always a people of one to three knowledge takers or knowledge pools that will drive the business there. But if they are moving to another company, you're as an enterprise are left alone with this technology stack that is sometimes very specific to one certain technology, to one certain brand, to one certain vendor. And then you have to refill this position and then retain this position. And we come again, coming back to us, we want to provide this great foundation and enable customers to also refocus on architecture and cloud enablement.
Yeah, that's actually a really interesting point in that I think a lot of the core security functions that are out there are roughly equal across vendors. That is, everybody can do next gen, everybody can do a coarse basic stateful packet filtering and so on, that you can kind of line up all of these core functions that are there. And it ends up being the differentiator is, how do you manage this? It's not the functionality that you're getting or how secure it is. I mean, security people could get mad at me and say, oh, there's differences, banks. But I think for most businesses, the core functionality you're looking for there, how is it delivered? How are you actually able to leverage these security services that you've bought? That becomes very important, which actually leads me to a follow-up question, Moritz. Now, you were just talking about integrating with CI/CD pipelines and giving developers an interface that they can access, some kind of an API, integrating with a pipeline. And you mentioned service meshes, and you may have said microservices earlier on. Can we translate that practically speaking, what that actually means? What I'm hearing, you tell me if I'm interpreting this right or wrong. What I'm hearing is, if I am building out a new microservices-based architecture in the cloud that perhaps is leveraging service meshes, I've got a CI/CD pipeline. That's how I push my changes out when I'm making application changes. That means then that for the security aspect of this, open systems could be a part of that, that when I'm deploying some part of the app or the app in its entirety, there's an open systems component to that and it just kind of flows into the pipeline or something else?
No, I mean, just to make it clear, we're not providing services in the service mesh right now because it's still a very young and volatile space.
Yes,
so
is.
If you look at so we focus primarily on the first two buckets, so IaaS adoption and SaaS, which is in itself it's a big topic.
Sure.
But eventually, yes, you are absolutely right. I mean, we believe, and this is where we have already a high degree, and we believe one of the highest degrees of automation is automating service delivery, automating security. And when you talk about CI/CD pipelines, I think this is where we should end up with there. When you have a business intent and you create an application, the API should be part of your blueprint or your canary to be actually activated automatically without the developer having to think about what are actually the implications and putting this into production. And looking at projects like Spinnaker and others, in that, or Mesosphere in that space, there are already tools for that that start to build this. But on a actually operational level, it is still a very project-driven, a very enterprise-specific or business-specific, product-specific even mode, how you then make use of the CI/CD. But I think over time, we will get more standardization around this. And CI/CD is one of the most promising candidates after OpenStack to really become this this integration layer between different actual clouds and cloud drivers, as they call it, and cloud functions. Again, to your point, coming back, I think companies start to realize that it's about operationalizing technologies creates more value. And this is what I said in the beginning and meant in the beginning, create outputs and outcome rather than looking at the different features that one point solution has versus the other and say, yeah, is my DPI engine one better than the other, or is my packets inspection mechanism better than the other? It can make a difference, of course. I don't want to diminish the different advantages of different technologies. But in the end, is you can deploy the greatest technology in a worst possible way and vice versa, right? It's all about finding this middle ground and in the best way possible.
So talking about being able to integrate security and networking into the operational flow, could you give an example maybe of how open systems will be involved if an enterprise, say, is, you know, onboarding or spinning up a new SaaS application?
A very good point. So first of all, through our integration with our secure web gateway, companies directly become a visibility in their current SaaS usage. Because you have to think about, most of the enterprises don't know, or teams don't know, what is my exposure with Shadow IT? Where I know there's web traffic, but what is the amount of SaaS applications inside this web traffic? And sure, what is the data doing this inside this? So we usually go in and say we do an initial cloud risk assessment where we take 1 or 2 months of data that we captured and then process it with the CASB to create a cloud risk assessment report that gives clear understanding of where the risks and exposure are in terms of data loss, compliance issues, but also then threats that could be leaked passwords, strange sharing behavior, et cetera, et cetera.
And okay, so for example, you know, the corporate official corporate collaboration platform might be Teams, but maybe there's a group of developers who want to be on Slack, and so they just set up Slack because it's free, and they're using that, and IT may not know about it, or security may not know about it, but with, you're saying what you can do is say, hey, by the way, here's some folks using Slack, and you need to get your arms around that.
Yeah, exactly. So it's one part of this. It's a very good example of Slack. So imagine you have Teams as the default communications channel, and often it happens that Slack just emerges in, amongst the developer community to make their lives easier because it's hip, it's cool to do it. So what we can then provide is show where, who's using it, how often, how much data is shared via this platform, and mm-hmm. how secure is this platform from a compliance aspect. So the CASB solution we integrate with uses a cloud confidence index, which then gives the CISO and the security team a clear understanding of what are the risk implications of the data being transferred over or to this platform.
Okay. And so from there, the organization can make a business risk or can make a business decision based on the risk of the platform and the information being shared. Do we want to squash this or just let them use it, but also put some controls around it?
Exactly. And that's the great factor, because the difference to before using this kind of approach, the option would have been, hey, let's block it. This was the standard security mm-hmm. answer to say, I don't know it. We cannot assess the risk. It's maybe takes me too much time to assess the risk. So let's take a whitelist and blacklist everything else that we don't know. So for instance, private email, sharing, storage applications, And now with this new approach, you can define a threshold of what is the acceptable cloud confidence level. You can still have your blocking and blacklist policies, of course. But imagine if you could say, tell your business, well, let's adopt, and we have a framework to adopt SaaS applications to share and use the benefits of SaaS, which are obvious, but at the same time, block anything that's not according to the baseline compliance framework. So if you have a SaaS application that is not compliant with PCI, but you have a PCI requirement because you're a financial service, then you won't have access to that because you can enforce this via the CASB policy and the cloud security policy by saying every user that's trying to access an insecure and not PCI compliant website and tries to upload data to it will see a page saying, hey, sorry, this is not possible. You can request to access it, and or you can point the users to a different application saying, you shouldn't use Slack. Please use our Teams because it's not acceptable. For us. I mean, that's a possibility. Yeah. So you can enable access, but you also can steer and coach users to go there.
And in any case, the traffic, because it's flowing through an open systems device, whether on-prem or in the cloud, is still going to get that next-gen firewall inspection and all the other security controls.
That's right. That's correct. But at the same time, in addition, we also provide API inspection for anything that should not be covered by that, because, you know, in the end, it only matters what actually hits the cloud itself, however it came there.
Moritz, this has been a... I like these conversations because it's, you know, when we talk about what you guys are doing with is this, you know, strong integration of a platform that takes what I'm doing on-prem with what I'm doing in cloud and then still gives me a unified way to secure it, that's key. And that's not even primarily what Open Systems does. You guys are SD-WAN, but you're adding the security to the platform as well. And that's really cool. Now, if people want to find out more about Open Systems, Moritz, where would you direct them?
So people who are interested in continuing the conversation should just go to open-systems.com. Or ping me directly on LinkedIn via private message. You find the profile metadata.
Lovely. And again, if you're thinking about SD-WAN, you should be thinking about security. We thank our sponsor, Open Systems, for sharing their secure SD-WAN approach and explaining how to integrate it with cloud, because as it turns out for most of us, that really matters. So again, remember to visit open-systems.com to find out more about them. We would appreciate it. And to find out more about the Packet Pushers podcast network for IT professionals, visit packetpushers.net and check out our subscribe page. Last but not least, remember that too much networking would never be enough.